5:55 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Iraqi forces have liberated the city of Fallujah from Islamic State fighters following a month-long military offensive to seize control. The battle for Fallujah was backed by U.S.-led coalition airstrikes. Former U.S. Ambassador to Iraq James Jeffrey tells VOA this is the way to defeat IS.
We can take down ISIS quickly if we combine elite ground forces, Iraqi, and I would prefer more U.S., with vigorous and aggressive use of American air power and other support. That's what we saw in this battle.
Jeffrey says the next step is doing away with the Islamic State is to retake the city of Mosul. But Iraqi Kurdish military commanders warn that Mosul, Iraq's second largest city, will be much tougher a fight than will require a political military agreement between all parties involved. Britain's decision to leave the European Union is resounding in the U.S. presidential race. Republican Party presumptive nominee Donald Trump sees Britain's move as an affirmation of his campaign's core messages, while Democrat Hillary Clinton sees the episode as further evidence Trump is unfit to be president. A transatlantic shockwave rattling the U.S. economy recovery could also be a wild card in the election. Obama administration is stressing the need to minimize disruptions, stemming, from the so-called Brexit. The Italian Coast Guard says it has coordinated the rescue of more than 3,300 migrants in the Mediterranean as Libya-based smugglers exploited good weather and calm seas to launch boats full of migrants toward Italy. The Coast Guard says the migrants were saved Sunday in an area 55 kilometers off the Libyan coast. This is VOA News. A second election in Spain in 6 months did little to clarify the political landscape, with acting Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy's center-right People's Party emerging with the biggest block of seats, 137, but far short of the 176 needed for a majority. It must now try to form a governing coalition. Atlantic Council analyst Carlos Costello says the real reason the new elections were called was the party failed to form a working coalition.
We're seeing that we have these emerging new parties, both on the liberal side and the far left, who made big gains in the parliament. I think we confronted a situation that we weren't used to, which was having to negotiate a coalition government. That's where new elections were needed. No one was able to come together and negotiate like a coalition agreement.
Center-left socialists came in second on Sunday with 85 seats. Outcome following December's ballot came amid voter anger over high unemployment, austerity measures that included welfare and education cuts. A Somali cabinet minister was among the 15 killed. It happened Saturday in the Islamic State attack the Nasa Hablood Hotel in Mogadishu. That was a hotel room of Buri Hamza, who served as state minister for the prime minister's office, collapsed following a powerful car bomb. Four militants were among the dead, dozens of others wounded. That attack was the latest on the hotel in the Somali capital. Ambassador Hotel was attacked, killing 10, including two lawmakers. Tens of thousands of Palestinians in the Israeli-occupied West Bank have gone without water in recent weeks. Abdel Fattah Salim is one of them. He speaks here through an interpreter.
We come here and then we have to carry the water on our shoulders for a long distance. Those who can't afford to pay for a car to drive them are in trouble. They only have their shoulders.
As Israeli spokesman says, there is exactly the same amount of water on the Israeli side, but there is better management, he says, of that water. He said Palestinians are stealing the water directly from pipes. Shortage may be recent, but the dispute over water has long been one of the main areas of contention in the decades-old Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Panama officially has opened an addition to its canal for a new generation of super cargo ships. This caps a 9-year, $5.4 billion expansion project that will double shipping capacity and impact global trade zones. Latest generation of giant carriers cannot fit through the 102-year-old canal. Unable to reach the East Coast by sea, many of them docked in California to be shipped by rail across the states.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington, in for James Batty. Today is Monday, June 27th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama will be in Liberia to highlight the importance of girls' education.
She is going to go to a place called Kakata. Kakata, about 45 miles from Monrovia itself, where the U.S. Peace Corps has its training and programming facilities.
VOA reporter James Batty speaking with me from Liberia, where he's covering the visit of U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama. Iraqi senior officials say that their forces have liberated the city of Fallujah from the Islamic State fighters following a month-long military offensive to seize control of the city. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will make previously unannounced stops in Brussels and London today as Washington reacts with concern to Britain's vote to pull out of the European Union. And the seventh edition of the Global Entrepreneurship Summit concluded this weekend in Palo Alto, California.
We had entrepreneurs from every corner of the earth in a situation where they were able to meet one another, speak to one another, hear each other's ideas, but more importantly, mix with venture capitalists and organizations that have the power to take their startups from idea to successful businesses.
Nosa Garrick is a filmmaker who tells the stories of young African entrepreneurs and innovators on her documentary series, My Africa Is. Those stories, plus Mark Owoma's thoughts, are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama will be in Liberia today on a visit where she plans to highlight girls' education. VOA's James Batty is on assignment in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, where he's covering the visit. He joins us live via telephone link. James, you're in Liberia, in Monrovia, today in preparation for the visit of the U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama. What is the mood like in Liberia? Are Liberians ready for Michelle Obama's visit?
Yes, Jackson. As you know, First Lady Michelle Obama comes to Liberia today, Monday. And Liberians have been kind of looking forward to Mrs. Obama's visit with great anticipation. And they are eagerly awaiting her arrival, which is today, Monday, in Liberia. But in the capital city itself, Monrovia, where I am based, the media particularly, and let me tell you that they have a proliferation of lots of radio stations and newspapers, and the media have been talking about her coming, and so people are looking forward to that. Unfortunately, though, for a great majority of the people in the Monrovia center itself, they may not get to see Mrs. Obama in person because she is not coming. She is not coming through to the city center. She might just arrive and go to a couple of places outside the capital city.
Okay. You say she's actually not going to visit the capital city, Monrovia. But how long is she in the country, and which cities is she going to visit while in Liberia?
We are told that the First Lady has about maybe 5 to 6 hours to stay in Liberia, and that's one of the reasons that she does not have the time. Although the Liberian government had wanted for her to come to the city itself, come to Monrovia City itself, but she does not, according to what we understand, have enough time. As a result, she is not coming to Monrovia City Center itself.
And where is she actually going to visit? If she's not going to Monrovia, which cities is she going to visit?
She is going to go to a place called Kakata. Kakata, about 45 miles from Monrovia itself, where the U.S. Peace Corps has its training and programming facilities. This is where when Peace Corps come to the country, this is where they are trained because they have to understand culture and kind of people that they are going to be dealing with. This is where they are trained, and she goes to Kakata. From Kakata, Mrs. Obama will return to Unification Town, which is nearer to the Roberts International Airport, where she will visit a school called the R.S. Caulfield High School.
Why is she visiting the school? What is the purpose of her visit to that school?
What we understand is the purpose of the First Lady's visit to Liberia. This is part of the Let Girls Learn initiative. This was started in 2015 by President Barack Obama and Mrs. Obama as part of the U.S. government effort to, what they say, address some of the challenges that preventing millions of young girls, adolescents, from attending and completing their school. The U.S. Peace Corps is really involved in this particular program and has funded more than 100 Let Girls Learn projects. So that's the connection of the Peace Corps. 100 Let Girls Learn projects in about 21 countries in Africa. During her visit, Mrs. Obama will visit the school that I told you about in Unification Town, and where she will hold discussions with these adolescent girls who have faced some serious obstacles in getting their education.
Do you know if she's going to meet with the president, Sirleaf Johnson?
Oh, yes. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is going to be at the airport and will be traveling with the U.S. First Lady.
Okay. Are there any special activities that you know of in the city that are being organized in commemoration of her visit?
Well, because she is not coming to the city center itself, but people do know that she's coming. And as we were saying, she goes to Calcutta, where the Peace Corps has, the U.S. Peace Corps has its training and programming facility. And on Saturday, I traveled to Calcutta, where I talked with Becky Banton. Becky Banton is the director of the U.S. Peace Corps training and programming facility.
Next, let's listen to the interview that you had with Missy Becky Banton.
Let Girls Learn is an initiative started by Michelle Obama to encourage the 62 million girls who are out of school to be able to access education.
And what is the Peace Corps' role in this?
So Peace Corps' role, we have, I think, 26 countries that are involved in Let Girls Learn, and our goal is to, in Liberia specifically, our goal is to encourage education both among girls and boys, but increasing the access of education to girls.
Now, the First Lady will be coming to Calcutta, we understand, to meet with some young women who are involved in your program, something called GLOW. What is it?
So GLOW stands for Girls Leading Our World, and GLOW has been happening for many years in different Peace Corps countries all around the world. And so it's a camp where you talk about leadership and self-esteem and healthy relationships and just giving girls kind of tools they need and leadership skills to kind of make good decisions for their lives.
So what do you see as some of the impediments for girls' education here in Liberia?
I mean, I think other people can answer that better, but I think many times it's socioeconomic, where maybe they don't have money for school fees. Many times girls and boys actually have to work in order to help their families, provide food for their families. And so there's many different reasons why girls aren't in school.
So this is the Peace Corps training facility.
Yes.
What exactly do you do here?
So when we currently have trainees here, and so we train them to be Peace Corps volunteers in Liberia. So they are all math and science teachers at the high school level in government high schools. And so we are training them to be volunteers, to be teachers, so they can go out into Liberian schools and teach Liberian students effectively.
As a Peace Corps in Africa, in Liberia, when you go back home, what do Americans ask you about what Liberia is and what Africa is?
So I think there is this single story about what Africa is, that it's this, that it's all the same. And, of course, there's many variations within this country, much less around the continent. And so I just try to explain when the tiny part of Africa that I live in now is very different among the country. And so I just try to tell them that it's not just one place and then everyone's different. I think there's a lot of misunderstandings of what people have of Africans. And, you know, many times what they see on TV is not what really happens here day to day.
So you kind of feel there's the need for Peace Corps like you to come to Africa, more Peace Corps.
Well, I mean, I think Peace Corps is a greater organization.
Yeah.
And I think volunteers do make a positive impact in the communities they work with, as well as grow themselves. So I think that's a really positive thing. And I don't know about, I mean, more Peace Corps is great. So people should join, and it's a great experience and life-changing.
Making the world a different place.
Well, we hope.
Becky, I have one last question.
Okay.
Have you learned to eat Liberian food, or have you learned to prepare Liberian food? And what's your favorite?
So I haven't learned to prepare, but I can eat a small, but I can't eat rice.
You see, I like this. Small.
Small. But I can't eat rice every day. So, but my favorite is I like potato greens. I like ground pea.
Well, I like to introduce you to cassava leaves, okay?
Yeah. Okay,
thank
great.
You. Thank you very thank much. You.
Okay. That was Becky Banton, Director of Programming of the U.S. Peace Corps Programming and Training Facility in Calcutta, just 45 miles outside of Monrovia. I had a chance to. I spoke with her on Saturday ahead of the First Lady Michelle Obama's visit. As you know, Mrs. Obama will be visiting Calcutta at that particular facility when she arrives today, Monday.
Thank you very much, James Batty. James is in Liberia, covering the visit of the U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama. Thank you very much, James. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Jackson.
That was VOA's James Batty. He joined us live from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Authorities in Somalia say a terrorist siege of a Mogadishu hotel this weekend ended, but not before at least 20 people were killed, including a government minister. The militant group Al-Shabaab is claiming responsibility for the attack, saying the hotel is frequented by what it calls apostate government members. Somalia's foreign minister says among the dead is the country's environment minister, Buri Mohamed Hamza. Over the past years, the Islamist group has been targeting big hotels and the most populated places in the capital of Mogadishu. Professor William Reno is a researcher in the Department of Political Science at Northwest University in Chicago. He tells VOA Somali Services' Sara Abdi Ahmed that with such attacks, Al-Shabaab is sending a signal that they are still able to carry out deadly assaults in the city.
They have guards and so forth, but they're vulnerable because, you know, the legislators who live inside them and other people and the bombers want to target them. So the hotels, of course, are a good target.
And who's the responsibility to prevent such attacks that are going to the hotels?
Well, ideally, it's the government of Somalia's job to do that, but I think that one of the problems that I've seen from reports is that sometimes the security forces might be giving information to the people who do the attacks. So one way to tell might be if the police run away before an attack or something like that. But, of course, we see both happen. Sometimes the security forces are there and they fight back, but then there are other security forces that might share information with the attackers.
Al-Shabaab has been carrying such attacks over the last 5 years, and their attacks were going to the most populated places like the hotels, the airport, you know, places that are most of the people staying. So as long as they are not controlling the bigger cities, the bigger regions of South and Central Somalia, does these attacks mean they're getting or regaining their power, or they're just doing like hit-and-run attacks?
Well, attacks like this are a way of communicating to other people. So what the attacks tell people is that even if Al-Shabaab doesn't actually rule Mogadishu, that it operates, it can control places, it can strike at any time. There are people who know that Shabaab is there, you know, so everybody else who's looking at the situation has to wonder, how extensive is this Shabaab control? And, you know, to attack these hotels, to kill legislators, other government officials and people, it's a sign to people in the city that they should not be able to rely on their government or AMISOM to be able to protect them. The bombings can tell people that there are two powers in the city. There is the government, but there's also Al-Shabaab.
The 7th edition of the Global Entrepreneurship Summit concluded this past weekend at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. U.S. President Barack Obama urged young entrepreneurs, including many from Africa, to expand and broaden the benefits of the world's interconnected nature. Nosa Garrick is a filmmaker who tells the stories of young African entrepreneurs and innovators on her documentary series, My Africa Is. She was in Palo Alto at the Global Entrepreneurship Summit, where she met with young African entrepreneurs, many of who are starting and running businesses across the continent. I reached Nosa by phone in Washington, D.C.
Well, I was really pleased to meet a lot of the African startups or African-led startups at the summit. Right before the summit, we had the big news with Mandela being funded by Mark Zuckerberg's foundation. And it points to the resilience, it points to the connectedness, and it points to the fact that these companies are viable and do stand a chance at being successful. A lot of the entrepreneurs I met were forward-thinking, so we're not just talking about low-tech, we're talking about high-tech. I had the pleasure of meeting one South African entrepreneur who was making 3D-printed prosthetics. You know, other people that were creating global marketplaces for goods and services that people in rural areas may not have access to, as well as making African goods available around the world. So there is, they are engaged. You know, African entrepreneurs are engaged. They're actually some of the most resilient entrepreneurs. They're most likely to start businesses. They probably have the most innate sense of entrepreneurship and innovation, because as we know, entrepreneurship and innovation comes from a place of not having. And a lot of the businesses that are coming out of the continent are about fulfilling major infrastructural needs that are missing. And what they're creating are means to leapfrog those some of the infrastructure that they don't have access to, and actually creating models that affect the world globally. So even if we look at mobile money, that's something that was originated and pioneered and developed in Kenya. And that is a conversation that we're starting to have around financial technology and how big of a player that is in this global economy. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize it, but I definitely don't think that entrepreneurs from the African continent should be underestimated. And the hope is that once people get a better understanding and start becoming more familiar with entrepreneurship on the continent, there will be more access.
Right, and you did speak to the resilience that these young people have in the face of many obstacles. Why don't you talk to us about some of the challenges that they told you they face as they start businesses or run their businesses?
I mean, the two biggest challenges that I've heard from companies on the continent is one, funding. And that comes with, you know, access to capital, access to people who have capital. And I think that's one of the biggest problems, which stems from A, them not knowing the individuals that they can go to with money. You know, the African rich don't make up that much of a percentage of the population. So it's about who you know, and that's the case everywhere. Secondly, it's about familiarity, which, as one entrepreneur told me, with businesses on the continent or with the continent in general. So even if you have outside investors that may be interested in or think that their solution is brilliant or whatever product they're offering, but because they're not familiar, and there's also this perception that businesses may not do well from the continent, so they're not likely to invest. The second biggest challenge they have is access to human capital. You know, it's one thing to start a team and to create a startup as a solopreneur or solo entrepreneur, but that's not necessarily something that's sustainable. And so finding the human capital, individuals that you can make a part of your team and can grow out your business more efficiently, is something that they may not have access to, because some people may not have the skills. Um, and and also or the experience.
Tell us a little bit about My Africa Is and what you see your role as a storyteller in terms of telling the stories of these young entrepreneurs on the continent.
As far as my role, I see myself as a catalyst. I see myself as someone that is able to give platforms to folks who have not had exposure yet, which is why I tried to dig really deep for stories that have not been told on the more mainstream media side of things. Because, you know, again, pointing back to that lack of familiarity, also it's painting the continent as more than just a victim mentality where we just are a place that needs to be aided. I want to point to these individuals that have solutions.
Nosa Garrick is a Nigerian filmmaker who tells the stories of young African entrepreneurs and innovators on her documentary series, My Africa Is. And now time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Jackson. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Africa Senior Athletics Championships in Eteguini, South Africa. South African Wade Fanica clocked 20.02 seconds to triumph in men's 200 meters on Sunday. Ivory Coast's Jose Barry Talou won women's 200 meters in 22.81 seconds. Morocco's Fouad El Kam and Kenyan Douglas Kipserem carried the day in the men's 1500 meters and 5000 meters, respectively. South Africa's Caster Semenya and Wenda Nell, along with Kenyan Nora Jeruto, won gold medals in women's 1500 meters, 400 meter hurdles, and 3000 meters steeplechase, respectively. On the infield, Lisa Labiche of the Seychelles, Cameroon's Aureole Dongmo, and Ghana's Nadia Eke triumphed in women's high jump, shot put, and triple jump, respectively, as South African Filmar van Rensburg won men's javelin. Kenyan's Samuel Gathimba and Grace Wanjiru prevailed in men's and women's 20-kilometer race walking, respectively. Botswana won the men's 4x400-meter relay, with Kenya placed runners-up ahead of South Africa, while South Africa prevailed in the women's 4x400-meters ahead of Nigeria, then Kenya. At the end of the five-day contest, defending champions South Africa topped the medal table, having amassed 16 gold, 9 silver and 8 bronze medals. Kenya is second and Nigeria third. They are followed by Ivory Coast, Botswana, while Ghana and Tunisia share sixth place. Ethiopia is eighth. Morocco and Cameroon share ninth spot. Turning to football, South Africa edged Botswana 3-2 to lift the Council of Southern Africa Football Association's COSAFA Cup in Windhoek, Namibia on Saturday. Earlier on, Swaziland pipped the Democratic Republic of Congo 1-0 in the bronze medal playoff as Namibia edged Zambia 1-0 to earn the plate trophy. Swaziland's Felix Badenhorst is the tournament's top scorer with 5 goals to his credit. Meanwhile, African champions Ivory Coast are drawn in Group C with Gabon, Mali and Morocco in the Africa qualifiers for the 2018 FIFA World Cup. According to the draws conducted in Cairo, Egypt on Friday, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Guinea, Libya and Tunisia are in Group A. Algeria, Cameroon, Nigeria and Zambia are in Group B. Group D consists of Burkina Faso, Cape Verde Islands, Senegal and South Africa, while Group E features Republic of Congo, Egypt, Ghana and Uganda. The contest starts in October. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omar in Eteguini, South Africa. Back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark, and have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, June 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and James Barty, as well as sports editor Mark Owuma, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year-old prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus,
Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC.